Davenport Blues, celebrating the birthplace in Iowa of Bix Beiderbecke, cornet player, composer, pianist, genius, alcoholic, and with Louis Armstrong and Charlie Parker, one of the only three great originators in jazz. Leon Beiderbecke, according to his brother, his middle name really was Bix, not Bismarck, as the reference books say. Beiderbecke was at military school in Chicago when the music business took him away from the well-to-do background in which he'd grown up. At home, he'd been taught the piano. From records, he learned the music of the original Dixieland jazz band, and out of doors, he heard the music of the great Negro bands passing Davenport on the riverboats. Now, with Oliver, Armstrong, and Noon to inspire him at the Windy City Speakeasy, Bix wanted to add his peculiarly personal voice to the new music. In 1923, aged 18, he quit college to join the Wolverines and became a sensation overnight. Bix's effect on the jazzmen of the early 20s was electric. For him, says Hoagy Carmichael, a solo, rather than a linked series of good phrases, was a series of single notes, each considered golden and perfect in itself. And every note, added Hoagy, came out like a girl saying yes. Neither I, says trumpeter Max Kaminski, nor anyone who knew Beiderbecke will ever get over him. And he praises the ethereal beauty of Bix's tone, a blend of pure joy and haunting sadness, his sense of form, his hotness, his shining fresh ideas, his lyricism, his swing, his perfect intonation, and his impeccable matchless taste. His intervals, says Max, were so orderly, so right, like a line of poetry. Thank you. the late Otis Ferguson wrote of Beiderbecke, that he could take off out of any chord sequence and wheel and lift with his gay new melodic figures as free of strain in the air as pigeons. He had absolute pitch and absolute control, and his lip and tongue and valve work were so exact in all registers that he could jump into a line of notes and make it sound like he'd slapped every one of them square in the face. After the Wolverines, Bix had played in various commercial bands before joining Paul Whiteman in 1927. The Beiderbecke legend, the most persistent myth in all jazz, has it that he drank because he was forced there to play syrupy dance music instead of the jazz that obsessed him. This is hardly true, or fair. He was hitting the bottle long before he joined Whiteman, and besides being accorded prima donna treatment in the orchestra, he was free to record jazz with his fellows, when his talents for catalyzing the lesser lights to play better than usual were seen. Died in 1931 of pneumonia, contracted when he went on a one-nighter in an open car while suffering from a cold. In fact, a friend said, he didn't die from that cold, he died of everything. He never washed, he never went with women, he never ate, he only had recourse to words as a last resort, and yet he was a marvelous companion. The truth was that for him, music was all. If that wasn't right, nothing. And because he was a perfectionist with a great capacity for self-criticism, his own music never was right for him, or not right enough, and that's why he drank, to escape the ensuing frustration. By the time the pneumonia hit him, however, he'd been doing it too long, and his weakened constitution was unable to take it. Fortunately for us, his private habits never interfered with his music, and it came out as clear as a bell, almost right up to the end. Beiderbecke as a human being couldn't stand the pace, as an artist he set the pace. And both as impressionistic pianist and as horn man, he was both linearly and harmonically years ahead of his time. Unlike all the other jazz greats, however, he has no imitators, no copyists. You can't, it's too difficult. In the local newspaper at Beiderbecke's hometown prophesied that Bixie will be forgotten as quickly as the popular songs he played. Otis Ferguson was a little nearer the mark. Said he, they buried the body, but for those who'd been around, and for those to come after, there was something grown out of the Iowa dirt that didn't die and couldn't be buried, so long as there should be a record left in the world and a turntable to spin it on.
Leslie's close-up on Vic Spiderbeck.